Hey there, and welcome back to the Mini Weekend. I'm your host, Jack. Let's get into it, Mini. First and foremost, I hope everybody had a wonderful, fun, and safe Thanksgiving. I definitely did myself, was able to see some family that I don't see as often and eat like a king, like I hope a lot of you did. So with that, let's get right into it. We're getting, coming at you guys with another kind of holiday festive drink. Before I was going to have it on, I told a couple friends and some family members I was going to do this, and it seems, and I kind of knew this, I'm just going to come out and quit toying with you guys. It's the Canada Dry, a cranberry ginger ale. What I was going to say is I kind of forgot about it because I don't drink, you know, ginger ale all that often. But when I used to drink soda more, like in college and stuff like that, it seemed like there was a divide. There was either people that really, really enjoyed ginger ale or just hated it. It was a taste thing, and I totally get that. I totally understand that. But personally, I love Canada Dry. I love ginger ale. It's, for me, it has been the taste. It's the taste that, you know, gets it for me. Really enjoy it. And I have to say, this summer, going over, I have some family that lives on a lake. So going over, having some lake days and spending some time by the lake, I had a couple of different flavors of Canada Dry and liked them. So, of course, me strolling through Target like a normal dad, found these and was like, hey, I don't know that I've had this before. Obviously, a couple weeks ago, we tried the Sprite and Cranberry limited time drink for you guys. And I thought, hey, I like ginger ale. I like cranberry flavored. This can't be bad. And again, I don't know that I like this as much as I like the Sprite, what was it? The Sprite spiced cranberry or whatever. Spiced cranberry. But it is solid. Again, if you are somebody that likes ginger ale, I would say you at least have to try it. And for those that don't like ginger ale, you know, I apologize. I'm sure you're bleh-ing at the thought of it. But yeah, I would say it doesn't, you know, that you kind of get the one thing you get from the usual ginger ale is almost the unnecessary, what is it? It's almost that unnecessary fizziness. But overall, I would say you don't get a ton of the ginger taste because, again, it's cranberry flavored. But once again, I really enjoy it. First time having it leading up to this week for you guys. So yeah, like I said, if you enjoy it, you can get it. Just about every other place where you can get a soft drinks, Walmart's, Target's. I personally got it at Target, Walmart, I'm sure Costco might have some, yeah, go check it out. If you like it, let me know. And, yeah, like I said, we've talked about this before, flavored sodas and stuff. If there's another flavor of, ginger ale that Canada Dry has out, let me know, and I'll definitely have to try it. So, yeah, so like I said, with Thanksgiving this last weekend, there was no podcast. So definitely have a lot to talk about. Had a couple of questions coming in from you guys. So obviously lots to talk about. So bear with us tonight. So first things first, Tommy Town. Back on the 22nd, when we should have had a podcast but didn't, the men's hockey team actually was National Signing Day and signed 9 student athletes, 7 from Minnesota, 1 from Missouri, and 1 from Pennsylvania. The 9 people they announced are as follows. There's Owen Bugens, a defenseman from Chanhassen High School. From Edina, forward Bobby Cowan. And then from Minnetonka, forward Gavin Gary, forward Luke Gary, and forward Alex Lunsky. And then two Shattuck St. Mary's kids, Rhett Hawkins from St. Louis, Missouri, and, Jack Podolny, from there. And then the last two, Drew Rolfs, a forward from Minnetrista, Minnesota, playing at Holy Family Catholic. And then the last one is a 6'2" goalie, A.J. White, from Pennsylvania, who is currently playing at St. Joseph's Prep School. So a huge congratulations to these guys on signing to come on, to Rico Blasi's squad. Obviously, this team has kind of been on a little bit of a roll lately, so sitting at their 7-6-1 record, coming off of a huge increase in wins. Love to see it, and I'm sure these kids are excited to get started, but in their seasons right now, but also to be a Tommy as well. So with that, that happened on the 22nd. Which was awesome. And then after that happened, the Tommies, after Thanksgiving, had a home series against Lake Superior State Lakers, winning the first game 4-2. Aaron Trotter getting 27 saves in that victory, and then falling short in game 2, 1-3, which would snap their 5-game CCHA win streak. The nice thing about the win was it was a well-balanced attack, and unfortunately the Tommies got off to a slow start in game 2, which ended up biting them in the butt. They allowed 2 goals within the game's first, I think it was 5 or 6 minutes, and were down 3-0 after the first period. So definitely a hole that you never want to have to climb out of. But again, nonetheless, they're still sitting at 7-6-1, 5-3 in the conference, and have a couple more series here before they kind of get into a little bit of a break. So with that, this upcoming weekend, Friday at 6:07 p.m., they will be in Big Rapids, Michigan, to take on Ferris State. And then Saturday, they will puck drop will be at 5:07. But if that wasn't enough for the men's hockey team, it was actually just announced earlier today that Aaron Trotter was named CCHA Goaltender of the Month. Trotter won all 3 games he started in the month of November and allowed just 1 even strength goal in 180 minutes of play. Yes, you heard that correct. For the first time in his young career, Aaron Trotter earned CCHA Goaltender of the Month for his 3-0 record, 90 saves, 947 save percentage, and a 1.67 goals against average in November. It's also worth noting, this is the second consecutive month that a Goaltender of the Month award was given to a Tommy. Jake Seibel earned this award for his play in October, and it is the first time that the award has been given to two different goalies on the same team since it's since the CCHA was formed in 2021. So, last thing worth of mentioning is Trotter and Seibel have arguably been the best goalie tandem in the conference and one of the best in the nation, with a combined goal average of 2.55 and a 909 save percentage too. So needless to say, hats off to both of them. Can't wait to see them get farther into the season and see what this 1-2 combo punch can do for the men's team. So with that, moving on to the women's team here. Sorry about that. Excuse me. So, like I said, for the women's team, they were in action the weekend after the last podcast we had before the Thanksgiving time. They had a home and home series against St. Cloud State Huskies. The first game saw them lose 1-0 in a game that the Huskies scored kind of early in the first period. But other than that, both teams kind of were held at a stalemate. St. Thomas's Calla Frank made 38 saves in that loss. And then in the second game against the Huskies, they lost 0-2. Olivia King making 32 saves in that as well. And then very similar to the men's team since the last podcast, the women's hockey team inked 6 girls on national signing day. The signing class features 6 student athletes, 5 from Minnesota and 1 from Wisconsin. One of them from my alma mater, forward Chloe Boreen, is from Somerset, Wisconsin, but plays at Hill Murray. Shout out Pioneers. And then defenseman Lauren Carl from Minnetonka, Minnesota, who's playing at Shattuck. Isla Lindemann from Duluth, Minnesota, playing at Duluth Marshall. And then Kaylin Mum and Nora Sauer, both from Andover, playing at Andover High School. Kaylin is a defenseman. Nora is a forward. And then the last girl is from Dayton, Minnesota, playing at Maple Grove High School. Danny Storm, who is a goalie. So once again, just like the men's team, huge congratulations from, all 6 of these girls, and best of luck to them on their, senior seasons. I can't wait to see, how they do this year, and then can't wait to see them, in action to see, this program, go. So, after signing day, the St. Tommy's took part in a 3-team, tournament. D1 in DC, the weekend of Thanksgiving on Friday, November 24th, they took on number eight ranked, Cornell and lost, 4-1. Olivia King, stood tall in this one. Where did my notes go? Come on. Sorry, making 23 saves. For the Purple, and Ella House being the lone Tommy getting on the board for the women's team. And then the day after that, they were able to come away victorious against Harvard in a 4-3 win. This game saw Harvard actually score first, and St. Thomas with 1 power play goal scoring 4 straight goals. Between the second period and the end of the first period. However, Harvard would claw back and get 2 power play goals in the third period to try to tie the game up. But Olivia King stood tall in this one, making 21 saves in the win. Goals in the win came from Maddie Brown, got 2, Riley Bartz, and Marky Oberg. So really, really awesome to see them kind of compete on a stage like this out in DC. And I'm just super glad they were able to come away with at least a win. Like I said, for some of these schools, and they come back home now, getting ready for a home-and-home series with Minnesota State, still looking for their first WCHA win of the year. So, very similar to the men's team, Friday night at 6 p.m., they will be in Mankato to take on the Mavericks. And then at 6 o'clock on Saturday, December 2nd, they will be at the St. Thomas Ice Arena for the second game. And like I said, still searching for WCHA win number 1. Super hopeful and super optimistic they can get at least 1 of 2, possibly 2 of 2. It is worth noting they did beat Minnesota State in a non-conference game back on the 9th in Maple Grove as part of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame game. So can't wait to see that get underway. And then, gosh, it's been a crazy time for both basketball teams. Since the last podcast, excuse me, the men's team has been in action. What is that? 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Unfortunately, only coming away with one victory. They sit at 3-4 now and still waiting for conference play to start. They took part as well the weekend before Thanksgiving in the Lancer Joust out in Riverside, California. In game number one, they lost to Cal Poly 60-61. Really, real nail biter. They were actually up, just couldn't close the game out. California Baptist the next day, 62-66. That was actually a game that they tried to complete the comeback and just too little too late. Fortunately, their last game against Portland State on the 19th, they were able to come away with a 76-70 win. So huge to be able to get that win. However, their latest game was this last Saturday, the 25th, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, taking on the University of Green Bay, and they came up short, losing 51-64. In that game, Raheem Anthony led the way for the Tommies with 18 points and 4 assists, and Parker Bjorklund was not far behind with 15 points and added 4 rebounds. So, it seems like, you know, looking over some of these games, especially these losses for the St. Thomas team, it seems to me like they have been kind of struggling. Outside of their win against Portland State, they kind of struggle in the first half and are able, kind of once they get their feet underneath them, are able to kind of get things going in the second half. So I think, unfortunately, and we'll get into the women's team, unlike the women's team, it doesn't seem to be like they're super cold shooting, super cold from the floor. They just, you know, it seems like there's some turnover issues, which, you know, again, that happens in an early season like this. And things of that nature, but just got to tighten up, and especially, you know, these close games, like losing these close games, 60-61, 62-66, are just kind of defeating, because as an athlete or a former athlete and talking to, you know, a number of athletes, you feel like you're right there, but you just weren't able to do enough, and that eats at you, you know, and, you know, it doesn't matter the level you play at, basketball or hockey, or football, or whatever, you're supposed to, you know, you got to have a quick memory, because you got to get back to the drawing board, you got to correct things, you got to move on, those kinds of things. But again, you know, I don't think they, you know, definitely don't have to press the panic button. Only 7 games into the season, like I said, the conference games haven't even started. But 3-4, again, you know, you'd like to see them, they got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games left, one of them against the number currently the number 3rd team in the nation. So, you know, sitting at 3-4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 games left. You'd love to, you know, and looking at some of these teams too, you'd love to see them come away 5-1 in that stretch to be able to go into a non-conference play at, you know, like an 8-5 record. But we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. So for them, until the night of the next podcast, they will be in Kalamazoo, Michigan to take on Western Michigan 2 nights from now on Friday at 4 p.m. And then the night of the next podcast, December 6th, they will host the University of Milwaukee Panthers at 7 p.m. in Shinnecker Arena. For the women's team, it's been a little bit of hot and cold. So actually, since we were on last, they went on a 3-game winning streak, which was really, really, really awesome. They beat UW River Falls, like we talked about last podcast, and then on the 18th, They got a big win, 70-62 over Utah Valley, headlined by Amber Scalia's 28 points. and then dispatched of St. Mary's from California on November 21st, 74, with a big game from Joe Langbin with 19 points, and Jordan Glenn, who finished with 10 rebounds and 6 assists. However, the girls are currently on a 3-game skid right now, as they lost to UC Irvine and Butler, both a part of the Tiger Turkey tip-off the weekend after Thanksgiving. And then just earlier tonight, they lost their first matchup against the Power 5 school, Iowa State. And a really, I mean, you know, they were able to have their moments, it seems like, but they lost 44-85. A team like Iowa State is usually in the tournament. And I can't remember what conference they're in, but their conference, I think it's a Big 12. And that's usually, you know, a high flying power school. That's Baylor, that's Texas, Oklahoma, you know, all that fun stuff. So yeah, like I said, it's, I think being able to be early on, they're sitting at 3-4 as well. Early on, getting that 3-game win streak, I think that does wonders for your confidence, even early in the season. Cause I think despite being on what I said, a 3-game skid, you know, it gives you that confidence that, hey, we can make things happen. And just hope for the best and keep shooting away. So for the women's team, they will be in action only one time before the next podcast at 1 p.m. on Saturday, December 2nd. They will be taking on Western Illinois in Macomb, Illinois. And then lastly, the football teams. We haven't really gotten a chance to talk too much about their final game of the season since it happened before what should have been the 22nd podcast, but they were able to rally and win their season finale 16-10 over Valparaiso, holding on to a lead. They were they had a 10-3 lead at halftime. Valparaiso tied it up with a touchdown in the third. And then St. Thomas got a touchdown with a missed PAT in the fourth quarter. And the defense did what it usually does, which is unbelievable. So another, huge game from the football team. They unfortunately are still ineligible for postseason play and finish the season with an 8-3 record, 7-1 in the conference. And before we break, there is a couple of announcements for the football team. So it was announced back on the 22nd, that tight end Will Burke was honored Saturday during the Tommy Senior Day as a finalist for the Doris Robinson award. What does that mean? Burke is a sophomore tight end for St. Thomas and is one of 15 finalists for the award, representing one of the 15 conferences in FCS football, named after the late school teacher and wife of Grambling State coach Eddie Robinson. The award is annually presented to an FCS student athlete who not only excels on the playing field and in the classroom, but in the community and beyond. Burke earned the PFL nomination after doing just that. Burke is a biology major, maintained a 3.76 grade point average during the 2022 academic year, and holds a cumulative average over 3.5 during his 3 years at St. Thomas. So a huge congratulations to him. This is really awesome. Knowing he's only a sophomore, really cool to be able to know that we're getting a guy like this come back next year. And, yeah, congratulations to him. Always love to hear about, things like these. And then just, What was it? Just yesterday, there were 17 Tommies that garnered all conference honors who closed, like I said, Pioneer Football League play 7-1. So the St. Thomas Pioneer Football League's all conference selections were junior offensive lineman Alec Rasmussen, Jonathan Bunce, junior linebacker, Johnson Fala, fifth year defensive back, were all on the first team. And then junior wide receiver kicking specialist Andrew McElroy, Hope Adebayo, junior running back, Matthew Rink, sophomore tight end, CJ Warren, senior CJ Warren, fifth year defensive lineman, Julie Fitzgerald, fifth year defensive lineman, and Noah Freight, junior defensive lineman, all made the second team. And then honorable mentions were Luke Herzog, junior linebacker, Jack Moeller, senior linebacker, Landon Reed, junior running back, fullback, Langston Robinson, junior offensive lineman, Tommy Shelstead, fifth-year linebacker, Sean Shipman, junior running back, and Brock Stanek, sophomore offensive lineman. So it's really amazing to see all of these names. You know, it really makes you feel like if you're Glenn Caruso, seeing these announcements and stuff like that's got to make you feel amazing in terms of, you know, the kind of team and the kind of players that you have, even though you're not eligible to make it to the postseason yet. It makes you feel like you got a good group of guys and all that. And if that wasn't enough, St. Thomas lands 4 players on the Pioneer Football League All-Academic Conference list, and this was just announced just earlier today. Junior offensive lineman Alec Rasmussen was voted to the first team All-Academic Conference for a second consecutive season after earning the same honor in 2022. He's maintained a 3.84 GPA while majoring in business administration with a concentration in financial management. Jonathan Bunce, a junior linebacker, earned his first honors for the second consecutive season, having put up both impressive numbers both in the classroom and on the field. He boasts a 3.92 GPA while leading St. Thomas. His defensive efforts, Johnson Fala, fifth-year defensive back, continues to rack up the postseason awards as he garnered the first team All-Academic Conference for the first time in his career. This year, he tallied 33 tackles, 29 of which were solo in 11 games. He led the team in solo attacks, interceptions with 3, and was ranked top 10 in the Pioneer Football League in passes defended and interceptions at the conclusion of the season. And he maintains a 4.0 graduate GPA while pursuing a master's in business administration. And then last but certainly not least, Griff Wirtz, a senior defensive back from Chaska, who maintained a 3.82 GPA while leading St. Thomas's secondary. Again, congratulations to all these players. I think it's awesome. To be able to read off all these awards is a good feeling, and as a fan, it makes you excited, especially with how many young of these guys. I mean, 2 of these guys are juniors. You know, we mentioned a couple sophomores earlier, and you know the future of this program is definitely in good hands. And then before we get to our professional teams, the last thing we do have to talk about. Very disappointing end to the season, as the Gopher football team went on to lose their last 4 games, and very easily could have won 3 of them. Obviously, you know, everybody saw going to Columbus and trying to beat Ohio State was going to be a very tough and tall task. Losing the way we did against Illinois, Purdue, we've already talked about, is just honestly pathetic. And then losing to Wisconsin, is never fun, especially when you know how talented the defense was. So, yeah. So a lot of you might be thinking, Jack, they finished 5-7, 3-6 in the conference. That can't be good. Season over. Their season should be over. However, it's not. So for those that do not know, there are 41 bowl games, which means there are 82 teams that make up all the FBS bowl games. And thanks to their academics, a 5-win Minnesota Gopher team is awarded a bowl spot. So, Jack, how exactly does this work? I got a lot of questions in terms of this, so I'm going to, I am going to explain this to you guys as simple as I know how. So, of the 82 needed, only 79 teams managed to achieve the required 6 wins for bowl eligibility. And as a result, the NCAA extended bowl invitations to James Madison and Jacksonville State, who are both transitioning into the FBS and thus normally would be ineligible for bowls. And that makes 81. So for the final spot, the NCAA utilizes their academic progress rate, APR, to select a 5-win team, boasting the highest APR at 992 among 5-win teams. The Gophers became the last team into the postseason. And fun fact, this actually marks the second time in a decade where the Gophers have secured a postseason game with fewer than 6 wins. In their previous opportunity, they were able to get an invite to the Quick Lane Bowl, where they defeated Central Michigan. So the specifics of the Gophers' upcoming bowl game is still unclear, including their opponent and all that stuff. And that is set to be announced after the conference championships games, which will be held this upcoming weekend. So for everybody inquiring, Jack, season's over, you know, thank God, Gophers. Hey, you know, how are they getting in? That is how they're getting in. So that is what I have for you guys tonight for the Gophers and for the Gopher and the... the Gophers and Tommytown and all that fun stuff. Now we get into the our local business shout out tonight is a place I have shouted out before, but I finally went to in the last 2 weeks. So want to shout them out again and give them the credit when credit's due. It was a really cool atmosphere. It was really fun. It's the market at Malcolm Yards. It's a food hall of ton of Minneapolis flavors. They have dining options from Asian food to vegan, plus a self-service beer in a trendy industrial food court. Like I said, I went there within the last couple of weeks, so it was pretty cold when I went there. But looking at this place when I was getting there with some people from my work, this is definitely a place to be when it's nice out. They got a lot of different stuff. I tried the Detroit-style deep dish pizza and totally, totally recommend. They're pretty big, so unless you plan on being there for a while and making maybe, you know, an afternoon out of it or something like that, it's only 6 pieces. But I'd recommend it, telling them it's, if you want to try it, telling them it's to go, so they put it in a box for you and then eat what you want, bring home what you want. But wanted to give everybody that wants to try it a heads up. So it works very much kind of like very much like a cafeteria, and almost like if you've heard of these upcoming the Amazon food stores in Seattle. So what happens is when you go in there, you swipe your card, and your credit card, debit card gets linked to one of their cards. So what happens is when you go and you order, you tap your card, and it goes on there. And then when you go out, you drop your card in the box, and then whatever you charge to your card just automatically gets taken out. And yeah, like I said, really, really cool atmosphere. We just went for lunch, but looking at it, they have a ton of events going on. They got music nights, they got HIIT classes on Saturday, they got yoga, they got December 3rd, they got football plus coloring with Figure Skating Club of Minneapolis. So if you guys haven't gone, I urge you, go check it out. The food was really great, drinks were really good. A lot of different variety, a lot of different things, and super glad I went and can't wait to go again sometime. So the excuse me, the first team we are going to talk about tonight is the Minnesota Wild. We got two questions that we're going to address and kind of talk about here. I want to preface this by saying these questions came in after the last loss. So, as many of you know, Sunday, November 26th, the Wild lost in Detroit to the Red Wings 1-4. Earlier in the morning after this game, I got a couple of questions. And then I got these questions. Couple hours before I saw the news that Dean Evason had been fired. So keep that in mind with what we're about to talk here. But first and foremost, Emily wanted to know what is the reason for the Wild struggles? Is it lack of scoring, goaltending, coaching, what? And truthfully, Guerin, like I said, Bill Guerin kind of answered that question for us a little bit, and he believes it's the coaching. This team is way too talented to be 5-10-4. So unless you watch every single game and you know exactly what's going on, you can't help but think like, geez, what's going on? And you kind of look into the numbers and you can't help but think it's a goaltending issue, which kind of leads into the next question. Sharon wants to know, when is it time to bring up Wallstedt? And again, these questions are coming from before tonight's or last night's, win, 3-1 win over St. Louis, their first win or only their second, third win in November, snapping their 7-game losing streak, and first with I think it's Mike Hines or something like that, John Hines. First game, so it's awesome to get that first win. Get that confidence going. So yeah, like I said, I've been kind of talking with some friends close to me that are even know more hockey than I do, and it really seems like the development of goalies really needs to be honed in, and right now is too early for Wallstedt. However, I would say do what you did last year with Rossi and bring him up for, because there's something in there where it's like, if you're on your rookie deal and it's a two-way contract, once you play, your 12th game or your 10th game or something like that, or you suit up for it, your contract actually starts, your length starts. And that's why they brought Rossi back down last year. I think they should do that with Wallstedt, because this is the bottom line. The bottom line is this. I'm gonna give you guys some stats here. And I want you to keep in mind there are 32 NHL teams, okay? Right now, Marc-Andre Fleury is currently 44th in the league in goals against average at 3.46. And Filip Gustavsson is 52nd with a 3.68 goals against average. And for, another way to look at it too, Marc-Andre Fleury is 52nd in the league with a, no, Gustavsson is 43rd with an 886 save percentage, and Marc-Andre Fleury is 52nd with an 875. I bring up the fact that there's only 32 teams in the league so that you guys understand some teams have two goalies that have better goals against averages and save percentages than either of our goalies. So, is it, some people may look at this and say, Jack, It's, you know, it's a forward thing. Yeah, you know, we're losing Detroit 1-4, Colorado 2-3, 8-3 to Dallas. You know, it's not like we're scoring a ton. Then I would beg you to look at this. The teams with the highest goals against average, I'm just going to give you the top three here, okay? Vancouver is number one with a 3.96 goals for. Second is Los Angeles with a 3.85. And Colorado is third with a 3.76. And let me remind you, so I said 3.96, 3.85, 3.76. The Vancouver Canucks, who are leading the NHL, are averaging 0.3 more goals a game for them than Gustafsson is allowing. So what these stats show me is you can average 3-4 goals a game and you're still going to be barely higher than Marc-Andre Fleury and Philip Gustafsson's goals against average. Now, this isn't to say this is 100% on them, I'm sure. Again, I've been bad with watching the Wild, just busy, you know. November is a crazy month for us and that kind of stuff, but this team is too talented. The games I have watched in the beginning of the season, I know the Wild have always, the last couple of years, have been a team that if they get down early, they're able to get back into the thing and all that kind of stuff. But having, like, it seemed like there were a couple game stretch there, like a 4 or 5 game stretch there, where we were religiously giving up a goal within the game's first 8-9 minutes. And for 4 or 5 games in a row, we're having to climb out of a hole. Like, don't get me wrong. Good teams like the Wild and like other teams in the last couple of years and even this year are able to overcome those deficits. Having to always come from behind is frustrating. It takes a toll on you and it sucks. Like, nobody looks forward to that shit. I don't think you could find a single NHL player or NHL goalie that says, yeah, I love coming from behind every single game. Like, no, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to do that. So yeah, I mean, to answer both your questions, ladies, like I said, Emily, I would look at the goaltending and say, look, we probably, you know, hopefully we can get on a little bit of a stretch here so we can make one of these guys look good. Try to trade for somebody or maybe bring up Wallstedt. Like I said, I know people that know a little bit more about hockey than I do keep saying we gotta, you know, let him fully develop before we bring up Wallstedt. He really is, you know, supposed to be like the next Curtis Joseph, Patrick Waugh, whoever it is, which I get, but again, you gotta do something. You gotta do something. Again, I'm gonna tell them to you right now. Marc-Andre Fleury is 44th in the league with a 3.46 goals against average, and Philip Gustafsson is 52nd with a 3.68 average. Now, after the news, I'm sure a lot of people are like, hey, you know, maybe it was coaching. Maybe he wasn't utilizing Gustafsson and Fleury. Well, you know, maybe he should be riding one guy more than the other, and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, it is a frustrating issue to be in when your head coach gets fired. I've heard it so many times, NHL players saying, you know, it sucks to see a head coach go because they weren't the ones that were losing these games. Like, we're the players, we're losing these games. Unfortunately, the coaches have to, you know, deal with the consequences because you're not going to fire. It's easier to fire one head coach and maybe an assistant coach or two rather than firing, you know, 23 guys on your active roster. But yeah, like I said, I mean, the bottom line is this team, I mean, you look up and down this roster before we get into what's coming up for the Wild. You look up and down this roster, Matt Zuccarello, 5 goals, 22 points, Joel Eriksson-Ek, 11 goals, 18 points, Kirill Kaprizov, 6 goals, 18 points, Hartman, 7-11, Rossi, 6-11, Maroon, 2-8, you know, Boldy's only played 13 games now and is having a slower start, but he's got 9 points. Brodin's right there with 9 points. You know, you look up and down this roster and you can't help but think, holy shit, like this, like the names on this roster, there's no reason we shouldn't be, you know, at least, you know, 10-8-6 or, you know, at least a couple games better. But something's got to go. And truthfully, I think it is goaltending on the back end. And again, Sharon, I think there's a reason I'm not in charge in the front office of the Wild, because I would probably bring Wallstedt up right now. But again, I don't have a hockey mind like that. So yeah, that is what I have for you guys on the Wild tonight. And then for the Wolves, Mike wants to know, Jack, what is working for the Timberwolves right now? How are they one of the better teams in the league? And he's not wrong. Right now, they are currently first. Sorry about that. We're currently first in the Western Conference, second in the league, only behind the Boston Celtics. And, you know, it's interesting, Mike. I was at the New York Knicks game the night before the last podcast or something like that. And, yeah, really, really fun, really interesting stuff. And truthfully, I didn't really know, because I was kind of like, hey, you know, are we doing a lot of, you know, stuff? Are we getting a lot of points? And truthfully, it's defense. I think you look at this, and it took me a little bit to find out. We're kind of in the middle of the pack, maybe, you know, a little lower than the league average for points per game. The Timberwolves, through 17 games, are averaging 112.9 points per game. The Indiana Pacers are currently lead the entire league with 127.6 points per game. But it's interesting. You look at field goal percentage, we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 6th in the league at 48.4%. You know, even 3-point percentage, we're top third. But it's our defense, and I'm not kidding you. Only one other team in the league gives up less points per game than us. The New York Knicks give up 105.1 points per game to their opponent. The Timberwolves are second, giving up 106.2. Frame of reference, the Washington Wizards are the worst, who are average, giving up 124.8 points per game. And if that's not impressive enough, they're holding opponents to a 43% field goal percentage from the floor, which is the top in the league. The Oklahoma City Thunder are number two with 43.3. And then even three-point percentage, 33.2. Only the New Orleans Pelicans are holding opponents to a lesser three-point percentage. So, again, it's really eye-opening to see what defense can be. And it's not just, hey, you know, they're getting a ton of steals or they're getting a ton of blocks. They're kind of in the middle of the pack. They're 13th in steals per game with 7.3. Indiana leads with, I was looking at the wrong stuff. We're in the bottom third for steals per game with 7.4. And with Rudy Gobert, we're actually second in the league for blocks per game. But we're getting bodies on guys. We're making them shoot tough shots. And we're making them, you know, miss shots too. And I think the thing about this Timberwolves team is they're finding ways to win. There are certain games, if you look at their schedule, there just are certain games that they they're able to take advantage and blow some teams out that aren't as good as them. And, you know, other times, like the Thunder, they just find a way to come back down 12 with their leading scorer out and win by 3. So they're finding different ways to win, and it's really, really, really awesome to see. Up next for this team, tomorrow night, they will host Utah at 7, Saturday. They will be in Charlotte at 4 p.m. So, and then the night of the next podcast, December 6th, they will host the San Antonio Spurs. So, yeah, that's what we have for the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. I'm really enjoying the success of this team. It's different. It's fun. I like it. We'll just have to wait to see if they can keep up this level of play the entire season. So that brings us to our final subject of the night. Heartbreaking loss to the Bears entering the bye week, 12-10. I think even if we win this game against the Bears 12-10, I think there's less questions heading into this bye week, but by virtue of just losing this game two in a row now, two really close games in a row, I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. Who's going to be our quarterback going forward? What's his name? Dobbs did throw four interceptions. No, not all four were on him. For sure, one. I think two were actually his fault because he was trying to force it. He tried to force his first one into double coverage. Not sure why he did that. But one got tipped by somebody and was kind of gets it. And then another was two were like that. So it was kind of split 2-2, but still, he's got to be better with the ball. I think, again, we had a very small sample size. I think going forward, personally, as great as Dobbs has been, I think Jaren Hall, I would guess, is probably the way to go going forward. He seems like he knows our system a lot better because he's been here for, since training camp being a rookie. He knows the system better. He's spent more time with JJ. JJ's obviously going to be coming back in the Raiders. But at this point, the toughest thing about this loss is we're now three games behind the Lions for the NFC North, which means even if we beat the Lions twice, we're going to need the Lions to lose to somebody else for us to be able to try win the North, which would be ideal. However, we do not need to win the North. I think, now that Joe Burrow is out, all five of these games down the stretch are winnable. It's just a matter of, what JJ are we going to see? Is he going to be 100%? Who's our quarterback? Is it Mullins? Is it Dobbs? Who is it? So, with that, we will get into our picks, and we're going to do something a little bit different this week since we are going into the bye week in weeks 13. So without further ado, this is what I have for my picks for the week for you guys. So actually what I just said about Joe Burrow being out leads into my lock for the week. So the Jacksonville Jaguars are 8-point favorites right now over the Cincinnati Bengals, and their quarterback now is Jake Browning. And this last week, he proved capable, but when he got the ball out quick for the Bengals, but he still took four sacks in his starting debut. And then on the other side of the ball, Jacksonville has settled into a rhythm despite two blowout losses at home this season. I think the Jaguars have not been on Monday Night Football since, 2010 or 2011. So anticipate a rowdy crowd in this one. I think Trevor Lawrence averages a little over 300 passing yards in the last 2 to 3 weeks. I think he does the rest, and I got the Jags winning and covering the spread. I got them winning 27-17. And then my upset for the week is actually going to be the Denver Broncos. And I hate to admit it because Sean Payton is our head coach. And they're 3.5-point underdogs to the Houston Texans. As much as I think CJ Stroud is a stud and is playing really well, as much as I hate to admit it, looking into it, the Broncos have emerged as one of the hottest teams in the NFL, winning 5 straight games. And currently has an offense that has come around with first-year head coach Sean Payton, like I mentioned. Russell Wilson now has 8 TD passes and no interceptions in that 5-game winning streak. And this is a tricky spot for Houston, whose pass defense allows 252.5 yards per game. I think the Texans are 4-2 against the spread at home, and C.J. Stroud has been brilliant. But ultimately, I think Denver makes one more play on the road here to inch a little bit closer and to getting a comfortable spot in the AFC. I got the Broncos winning 31-27. Now, again, this week is a little bit different because the Vikings aren't playing. So right now, if you wanted to place a two-game parlay on just these, the lock and the upset that I gave you guys, you can. And placing a $100 bet at the Jags at -8 and the Broncos at +3.5, you would win $272.73, $10 to win $27.27, and $1 to win $2.73. Once again, before we get farther into this, I'm not a financial advisor. I am not liable for any losses, just like I'm not held accountable. And you guys have to send me any money if you cash in and win. However, in an effort to kind of keep going with what we've been doing with our three-game parlays that we've been kind of helping you guys out with, some have been cashing, some haven't. I'm sure with the other locks and other upsets, you guys have been kind of making what you want and what you feel comfortable with, which I think is awesome. So, like I said, in an effort to keep going with the three-game parlays we've been doing, I've been giving you guys, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are heading into Green Bay as only 6-point favorites. And I think this should be a double-digit win for Kansas City, even though Green Bay is coming off of a big win in Detroit. So now, with these three games, if you place a $100 bet at the Jags at -8, Broncos at 3.5, and Chiefs at -6, you would win $627.71, $10 to win $62.77, and $1 to win $6.28. Now, I'm going to give you my other upset I like in this week. I'm going to start with that because I don't think there was something that I explained. So my other upset is tonight's game, Seattle, who's +9 over the Cowboys. And a lot of people, I don't see the Seattle Seahawks beating the Cowboys. I just don't see them losing by over now 9 points. Now, a lot of people might be thinking, Jack, what the heck? A lot of you might have noticed you may have, maybe not, have placed bets on a team that are +3 or +5 and they lose. They end up losing the game, but you still cash out. That's because betting against the spread is a little different. So the spread is, once again, so -9. So if you were to place a bet on the Cowboys at -9, the Cowboys would have to win by more than 9 points for you to win that bet. So if you place a bet, a $10 bet on the Cowboys at -9, and they win by 8, you lose your $10. If you place a bet on the Cowboys at -9 and they win by 10, you win a couple bucks. However, the positive thing to betting on an underdog that has a big spread is you're not necessarily saying they're going to win this game. You're just essentially saying, okay, they're either going to win this game or they're going to lose by 9 points or less. Now, I think Seattle is a good team. I think Seattle is probably going to be playing with a little more urgency in this game than the Cowboys, simply from the fact that Seattle needs this game a lot more than the Cowboys do. The Cowboys are comfortably in, what's that like, I think the first or second wild card spot. No, first wild card spot, comfortably, and we're currently number two. So with that, I would take Seattle at +9. Now, it's a little bit different. So the spread is based off of how much a team wins or loses by, versus if you just bet the line, you're just essentially saying, hey, I think this team is going to win if you bet the line. So my other upset, like I said, Seattle, it'll be a tricky game, and it'll be a well-deserved game if Seattle is able to actually win outright in this game. I just think Seattle has a lot to play for, a lot to lose in this game, simply because of the gap between Seattle and the San Francisco 49ers, who they would have to overtake to win the NFC. What are they in? The NFC West. So that's why I like that as an upset. Other locks I like are Tampa Bay as a 6-point favorites over the Panthers. I know very similar to, maybe the Wild who just fired Dean Evason. Carolina may have, a little bit of dogfight in them with their first game with their new interim head coach. I don't see it. And then the Lions, surprisingly, are only, it probably has to do with their recent loss, are only 3.5-point favorites over the Saints, who I don't think are a great team. So I would say hammer both of those for that. So yeah, those are my picks for the week. Once again, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not liable for any losses, anything like that. And that's a little bit more information for those that are maybe new to betting, that want to get into it, that don't, that maybe didn't understand betting against the spread versus betting against the line. The line, you're typically going to see three numbers. So like sometimes for like the Wild, when the Wild are on a hot streak and they're going up against maybe the Arizona Coyotes who are on, in the bottom of the league, you're going to see in that matchup, you're going to see the line is going to say like Wild minus, 250 or something like that. And then next to the Coyotes, it's going to say plus one, plus 282 or something like that. And essentially all that means and what you got to look at is a plus and minus. Whoever has a minus next to it is usually, or not usually, whoever has a minus next to it is always the favorite. And whoever has a plus by them is always going to be the underdog. And just like common knowledge, you're more apt to win when you're more apt to win more money when you bet against the underdog. Once again, the difference between the three numbers and the one is with the three numbers next to their name, you're just betting who's going to win the game, which is a fun way to bet too. But if there's one number or a 1.5 or one or something 0.5 with a plus or minus, that's the spread. So once again, if you bet somebody with a plus 9, you're saying that team is either going to win outright or lose by 9 or less points. And the minus means that team has to win by that or more for you to win money. So yeah, it just dawned on me this week that I don't know that I really did a great job of explaining that to you guys when we first started off. So yeah, that is what I have for you guys tonight. And I will leave you with, remember, this podcast is about you guys, the listeners. If you have a topic you want me to address or a question you want me to answer, please reach out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, or by emailing us. Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram handles are at miniweekend. And email is miniweekend@gmail.com. That's MINNYWEEKEND @gmail.com. And be sure to let us know if you'd like to stay anonymous with your questions as well. Also, find us and give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter where there are giveaways and you can stay up to date on all things mini weekend. And lastly, make sure you hit that subscribe button to get notified of the new episode as soon as it comes out. Until next time, Mini.